This is an interview with Crystal Shank, Jane Cunliffe-Jones and Ruth Robinson. And my name is David Spencer from the Roseworthy Archive Volunteer Group. This is done on Friday the 20th of October 2017 at the Wake campus of the University of Adelaide. This interview is particularly noteworthy as it is 40 years since the first woman graduated with a Roseworthy Diploma of Agriculture. This is after it had been a male-only institution for over 90 years. So this interview is going to get some of those impressions from the first students in that area. Well, Crystal, what was your first impressions?
Oh, all those blokes with their wonderful hair. Hair past their shoulders, hair out to there. It was the era of hair. Oh, I was so jealous.
Anybody else? Jane, Ruth?
Oh, I don't think it was all just exciting and unknown as going from secondary school to tertiary institution would have to have been, wherever we were, I think, at the time. And I guess a bit fear of the unknown. We weren't quite sure what we were doing either, getting into agriculture or getting into a male-dominated world.
Well, would there be, 120 students there then?
I think there was a total of 150, of which the first years were 50, and of which we were 10 females amongst the intake of 50 blokes in that year. Yeah. There were there was also an enology course at that time. I think it was in our subsequent years, the horse course and the wine marketing production course and the international course were all introduced.
Yeah. But what about you, Jane?
I was just excited to have left home and to be amongst so many young men, and to be then at the beginning of that year, we were doing all sorts of exciting things to be orientated.
Mm.
And I was rebelling from the strict upbringing that I had and was exploring life, and yeah, I was just having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Roseworthy came as a great package deal because it provided us with tertiary education and accommodation and practical work experience on farm, which was a real game changer. I came from a horticultural property. I'd never had any dealings with cattle or sheep or pigs or horses.
Mm. And it was certainly made very clear to us from the outset that we needed to do the broad spectrum. I personally couldn't ever stand horticulture, but we all had to do everything.
Yeah. So what about the reasons for coming there? Like, you had this vision of working in agriculture at a future date?
I certainly did. I decided during my matriculation year that I really wanted to go home and work on the family farm. My father encouraged me to have some sort of an academic background behind me, I guess in case the going home didn't really work and I had something to fall back on. I had applied for veterinary science but didn't have good enough marks. So yes, I was certainly wanting to head to a practical agriculture.
I was born and bred in the city, and I was having conflict with my father about what I was going to do when I left school, and he wanted me to repeat and improve my grades so I could study medicine, and I said no way. And I already knew Ruth as we went to college together, and I said, she's going to Roseworthy, that's where I want to go. and that was my ticket to leave home as well.
Mm.
And to be my own person.
But what about you, Crystal?
Yeah, pretty much the same as both, coming from a horticultural property. And one of the chaps that I went to high school with had actually started Roseworthy a year ahead of me. So that was a good role model for me too. And there were three of us from the Riverland, and we shared rides and shared experiences. And I was warned to start training before I started college.
Well, while we're on that, the old Seba Chase is a famous thing initially for Roseworthy for initiation or getting part of being a student body. So what was your sort of recollections of that thing?
My recollections were that initially young men or boys of the older years in the second and third years would tell us that you need to start coming out with us in the morning so we can see what you're like as runners. So we did that. And then there was, then there were groups that were...
Studs
were formed,
mm-hmm.
and then there was a...
An auction.
And we were paraded around
The selling ring.
Yes.
The selling ring, that's right. We were paraded around the selling ring. And this was the first year that they got really high prices. I think I was bought for $50.
Oh.
And I was bought by the pub stud.
I have no recollection of my stud price or my purchase price.
You were a good runner, Jane. I don't think I was.
No, I wasn't either. I remember crossing the line close to you when coming in.
Oh, okay.
Mm, you put on a spurt at the end and beat me.
Okay, I was a bit determined.
So you all made it in
to
the end of the race?
As much as possible, we were treated the same way as the guys in our year. There were a few little bends made, I suppose. I think most of the college wanted to treat us as just another student, and that's the way we wanted to be treated because we were very keen to be accepted.
One thing, though, about that steeplechase that I remember was that they introduced bikes for the girls. The boys ran the whole race. We ran one third, got on the bikes and rode a little way, and then we had to get off with these jelly legs and finish the race, and that was really hard. So they thought they were doing us a favour, but I don't think they really were.
Okay. Well, let's move on to some of the daily life as a student back as you remember it in 1974, 75 and 76. So I think things like what's the accommodation like? Where were you put?
We were put in the four block, I think it was called, the double-storey red brick building, which was the newest building. So that was a point of difference because our first-year colleagues, male colleagues, were in the lesser accommodation of either the main building or what was called the corridor. And they certainly didn't have any locks on their doors, whereas we actually had the chains that you put put across from inside. So in other words, our rooms couldn't be broken into. So that was a bit of preferential treatment because part of the initiation was the older years, just walking in on the first year male students and tipping their beds upside down and doing shocking things to the blokes.
And we were put in that block near the fourth year students because they were supposed to be protecting us.
They were supposed to be more mature.
Yes.
And we were kept awake at night. There must have been a rotation of students come up into our section of the accommodation block and rattle our doors against the chain.
Yes.
You just get to sleep and your door would go bang, 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 bang. We were sleep deprived for at least a week.
I remember one of the analogy students, Pat Tokashu, taking us aside in the first week when graduation ball or dinner was going to be happening for the older students, and some of the second and third year guys had decided to be nice to invite some of the first year girls to take along as partners. However, Patrick made it quite clear that first years did not go to the graduation dinner, and we were first years, and his advice was valid, and it was more important to us to be accepted by our peers than it was to go along to the dinner.
Oh, yeah. What about things like mules and that sort of stuff?
Mules were horrible.
We got fat shocking. Very quickly because they were three-course meals and there was a lot of starch in them.
And a lot of roasts.
We filled up on bread and AJ, apricot jam, because the meals themselves were almost inedible. That's my memory.
And I like the custard, though. I did.
I remember drawing up a petition on one weekend when I was on dairy duty and the kitchen staff decided that they weren't going to provide us with cooked breakfast anymore. It was only going to be a continental breakfast. So I drew up a petition saying we wanted Australian breakfast, not continental, and we won. We got the cooked breakfast back.
Because
the breakfast was actually edible.
Mm. Did you have like a little kitchenette up in your room and that sort of thing? You have coffee or something?
Not in our room, but there was a kitchenette area for a number of rooms.
Mm. But yeah. We didn't use it much, I don't think. Maybe just for snacks at night. But
yeah. Or when we came back to college after a weekend away and we had food from home.
So some goodies to keep you going during the week. Yeah. What about, we talk about your, like your work, you used to still do some work on the farm with the various sections and stuff. How did that go?
I'd say pretty well. We were on a roster just like all the our fellow students. I think we're generally accepted by both the other students and by the staff supervising us.
Yeah, so I did have difficulty carrying the milk churns and things like that, and I think the girls cooperated really well, helping each other with the heavier lifting and the heavier tasks.
So you expect us to be able to do what the men could do?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we certainly took our turns on learning how to shear and stomp the bales and killing, you know, and slaughtering.
Yeah.
Oh, loading bales of hay, remember that? Mm.
What about, you told me earlier on about the getting the superphosphate from the siding. That what was that story you told me earlier?
Oh, who was that?
No, sorry, not the three of us.
You're talking about the not having a sack truck to load the bags.
No, must have been someone else.
The other girls.
Yeah, well, she said that they weren't allowed to use a sack truck. They had a man handle these bags. And,
it was
a bit hard work. It was pretty hard going. With the, you said the staff, so did you find that the staff had to make accommodation? Or do you think they just sort of treated you the same as the other male students in the year?
I'd say pretty much they were trying to treat us equally. We were reminiscing earlier about the man in the agricultural engineering area, who I think probably actually went above and beyond to encourage us learning how to weld and things, because I guess it was completely foreign to us. Whereas a lot of the boys had some experience in that. Back in those days, during school, you know, boys did woodwork or
metal
tech,
work, yes.
Whereas the girls did dressmaking.
And home economics. And never the twain shall meet or mix.
So mostly, my recollection is that most of the staff were encouraging. We do just remember one or two specific exceptions to that rule who thought that we were only there to get husbands or that we wouldn't stay, but I think that only made us all the more determined to be successful.
Mm. What about the lectures? Can you remember, or even work, can you remember the routines that you did? Like you had so many days lectures and so many days work. Can you remember what you did?
Yes, lectures started at 8 o'clock in the morning.
And they went for 3 hours solid before we had a break, I think.
Oh, sometimes, yeah.
And we had three days of lectures, and then we'd have 2 days of, say, practical work in laboratories or whatever, and then we might have that weekend off, or we'd be working.
We'd be rostered on.
Yeah.
But I remember the introduction of filing cabinets. The college canteen stopped filing cabinets. We could buy them, and we could actually start locking up our assignments and our lecture notes, and we would then know that, be assured that they were still there, because our rooms weren't lockable. We couldn't lock our possessions up. And it also protected our food stores against the mice, because we had mice plagues in the dormitories.
Mm, that's right. We could lock ourselves in, but once we'd gone out of the room, there was no way of locking it in.
Yeah. So with the work, you had you had 2 days' work, 1 week. Do you have, like, 1 week, get a whole week of work? Or
I thought it was more like weeks at a time.
It could have been, yes.
Of lectures and then a week of work, but the memory's getting a bit fuzzy, I have to say.
So with the lectures, you reckon they went for 3 hours, so you only had one in the morning, one in the afternoon, or do you have...
Oh, no, they were whole mornings.
That's what I mean.
Almost whole days, weren't they, even after lunch?
I think the lectures went for about 50 minutes, and then you had a 10-minute break, and then you went in for another lecture, 10-minute break, another lecture, 10-minute break, and then lunch.
And then
two in the afternoon.
And if the lecture went over the 50 minutes, then you didn't have much time between them.
Yeah.
That's my recollection. I think we had 3 days straight like that.
Mm.
Yeah, and exams every semester, like in June and December.
I guess. I can't remember.
Yeah. Probably.
Yes.
And what about with your lectures? Was there a lot of assignment work you did, or what was it like?
Yes.
We did. You know, we had all those collections, the entomology collection, the weed collections. Yeah. And then we had to pair up and do assignments and things like that.
Mm. Yeah. So does any particular lecturer stand out as being the most interesting people that gave lectures, or some which were really bad at lecturing? Or?
Look, I would like to commend Peter England. Mm. He was wonderful. And he set us an assignment of doing a case study on That's a farm. And I don't know about you, but I did my parents' property. Did you do your
No, parents? I did a piggery at Balaclava.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, that was good. It was very insightful.
Mm, it was.
And looking at things academically really helped me understand farming landscapes, because coming from a horticultural property, it's very small. You don't consider the farming landscape like natural waterways and other natural features of the land, but he made me think about that, because we had to plan fences and budget and cost fencing and water points and things like that. That was really good.
Mm. And what about the, being ten women amongst a lot of young men, so the social life was good or interesting?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Mm. I mean, there were lots of evenings at the pub and evenings down at Kangaroo Flat around the bonfire.
Yeah. Did you have to, weekends, you had to stay for weekend duty, that sort of thing?
Yes. Mm. Oh, yes. In our first year, I think it was pretty much expected. We live on campus all the time, and you had to have a pretty good excuse to go off it.
Yes.
Those rules got much more lenient in our subsequent years. Because this was the first year of Roseworthy being a College of Advanced Education. I think before that it had been part of the Department of Agriculture. So it was in a period of enlightenment, I think, certainly a beginning of a period of expansion of student numbers and types of courses. So I guess we were in a transition phase, really, between the old school, which was a very strict, almost like a school-like environment. I think you probably know more about it, David, because you were there before us. But moving into that far more liberated time.
Mm. Did you have cars in the first year then?
Yes, I certainly did.
I did. I had my parents' car.
So you had more independence. I had to wait to get a car, whereas before I was reliant on other people to give me rides home, and maybe I didn't go home as often because of that. But yes, my first car was my parents' old Ford.
I think it was great because we didn't have mobile phones then, and there was only one phone, I think, in the college, which meant that I'd left home and I didn't think to communicate with my parents. They probably didn't see me for a good 12 months. and whereas today, I can communicate with my children every day.
Did you do phone duty as a first year? Like, you have to sit by the phone, wait for, and then get...
There was certainly phone duty, yes. I think there was phone duty.
I think you might have had a little microphone you could call.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
A bit further back, we actually had to go and find them. We had a race around the college until you found them, and then tell them it was on the phone.
That's Joe Blair, you had a phone call. And you'd wonder where you might find people.
And we had that common room where we had we could play snooker and stuff. So that was a bit of fun. And we had the water hydrants, which provided other entertainment as well. People being washed down half naked and then...
Hydrations, I think they were called.
Yeah, and then putting the hoses... down the corridors and having slides down there, so it was a lot of fun.
What about the old pool? That was still there, wasn't it?
The dam.
Yes, I remember jumping off from a big height with my eyes closed.
I remember the microbial counts, the regular water testing, and then they finally ruled it unsafe for us to use.
Interesting. Okay, let's look at some further stuff here. Like being the first students at the college, can you remember any particular experiences which reflected the attitudes of the day? Because we're going from a time when agriculture, Roseworthy, was very male dominated, and there was a transition time where people's, I guess, heads had to come around to a different sort of point of view. Are there any particular instances or things that people did or the way things were done that we reflect on now we think are quite sort of dated sort of ways of thinking?
Well, I guess that the whole fact that it was an issue that the first girls were there and we were sort of struggling for acceptance both within the college and then after we'd left, I mean that today, young women today would, if that was suggested to them, it would it would just be a surprise to them that it ever existed, I think.
Mm.
So in a way, we were trailblazers, and I guess I hope it was easier for those who followed us.
Mm. Do you think that when you first came there, did you think about this, or you just decided you want to go to Rosewood and that was it?
I was just really pleased that it was a complete fluke for me that I wanted to go there, and it was the very year that was the first year that accepted girls, because as is probably recorded in history, the previous principal under the old education department, agriculture department mantle, Bob Herriot, had declared that women would go there over his dead body, and he had only just retired in the year leading up to our admission. So for me, I was just very grateful that I could do what I wanted to do, and the timing was just right.
Mm.
Well, when you found that visiting experts or lecturers, when they're talking to a group, did they ignore you as a person, or did they look at the men only? Or
no,
I don't
remember that. I did find that in my working life, though, afterwards, when I was the sole employee of the Riverland Pest Plant Control Board, I was accepted quite well within the horticultural community of the Riverland. But once we got a fellow officer in for me, who was an older man, people would look to him rather than me. I was the senior officer, but I was younger and I was female, and they looked to him for the professional advice and instructions, and that was a bit disconcerting. And that would have been in the early 80s, mid 80s. Yeah.
Mm. And did that change during that later on, or was it?
I'm sure it would have. I left soon after that.
And what any other memories or barriers that you met when you started your careers?
I went to Teachers College afterwards, and then went down to Narracourt to be a science teacher, which probably in retrospect, was being a city girl, was probably a little bit foolish, because I was teaching a lot of boys who were off the land, and I ended up leaving after about 4 years. I enjoyed it, but I also didn't enjoy it because I think they were challenging me, one, because I was a woman, two, because I was city bred, you know. I don't think they really accepted me in that role.
And the subsequent career, would you move on after that, after your teaching year?
After I taught, I didn't work for quite some time because I became a mother, and I saw that as a rewarding career, and then went into what I originally wanted to do as a teenager. I went into nursing and midwifery.
So you trained again?
I retrained. Mm. I mean, because apparently my parents didn't want me to go into nursing because of the way nurses were treated. I hadn't understood that, but I think nurses are treated very well these days, and so are midwives.
Mm, okay. What about you, Ruth? Did you?
Yes. Well, I went home to the family property in a mixed dry land situation north of Jamestown. I felt accepted by obviously my own family and my immediate neighbours. I was probably more strongly supported by other farmers who were virtually all male. I found some of the women didn't understand that I actually had chosen to have a career in active farming. I think simply because it was something unknown to them, they couldn't understand why I'd want to get out there with the filth. But that gradually broke down. I'd also had a couple of stock agents who perhaps were less than supportive, and I fixed that by switching my allegiance from one stock firm to another. So it certainly in the first few years I was very conscious that I was sort of proving myself as a female farmer, but it broke down over time.
Can you remember, like, say just after your graduation, you're all there either making a start or thinking about your next step, What about the other colleagues and the female colleagues in your class? Do they achieve their sort of goals as a career, or do they have barriers as well?
Chris Salter, she went on to a lifelong career in the Department of Agriculture as an extension officer, advisor, researcher. Other people changed career directions. Two others became ag science teachers. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Then mm-hmm. Janet and Gail.
Janet and
Gail. Gail was a teacher for a while, wasn't she? And then they mm-hmm. were actively involved in dairying.
I thought it was Marianne.
Yes, and Gail. Okay. Gail was a pest plants officer for a while as well.
Right. She didn't do teaching, Gail.
Right. Yes.
Was it one of you talked about the superannuation?
That was Janet and Chris Salter.
Yeah.
Yes, how they weren't allowed to take up superannuation because they were women in the early days.
Yeah, that was in the government super scheme,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, Education Department and Department of Agriculture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think they weren't allowed to, or just weren't encouraged to?
No, I think as they were telling it this morning, they simply were not accepted, which is totally ridiculous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thinking back now, it's 40 years since you graduated. It seems like it is a lifetime. Can you think of some of the main things you've drawn out of your time as being a Roseworthy student?
Personally, I think having been to Roseworthy simply gave me the confidence to go and embark on a career in agriculture, which I think if I'd gone straight from school to trying to do that, I wouldn't have had that confidence. So it's not necessarily specifically what I'd learned doing the course, but the very fact that I'd been there for 3 or 4 years. And Roseworthy was well respected as a course. So if you said you'd been to Roseworthy, that was I put a sort of a ticket to yes, you do know something about what you're talking about.
Mm. What about contact with your old colleagues from your student days? Did you keep in touch with many people?
Probably not as much as we could have. Jane and I have always kept in touch. There are people who are in our course who live not far from us at home. I do see relatively regularly, and we're always supportive of each other.
There's several thousand graduates alive which have been to Roseworthy, so it's it is a big family. And if you mention I went to Roseworthy and they did too, straight away you're related because you've been there.
And that's Australia wide because the oenology students, for example, are scattered across Australia. Wherever you go, especially if you work in the horticultural industry, you will bump into a Plonky. That's wonderful. It's great. Yeah.
I have found that the benefit of me going to Roseworthy is that I have a strong passion for the environment, and whereas some people have taken up lately recycling and mulching and composting, I've been doing that all my life, and I attribute that partly to my family but also to Roseworthy and the appreciation that we are responsible for caretaking of this world. So everything that I've tackled in my life has been built on to who I am now, and I value that experience. It also helped me mature as a young woman and develop my independence and use my skills, so I value it.
And I value the connections I made, meeting the other people, making friends and meeting their families and seeing their farms and their the way they grew up. It was a real eye opener, and I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, with all those people that you've met, do you see many of them or very few?
I'm very close friends with some, but the girls, there's a couple that I stay in touch with relatively often, not as often as I should, but some I haven't seen for 40 years. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Thank you, girls.
And with the you've got a dinner tonight where you'll meet more of your colleagues, and that'll be interesting for you. With 40 years is a long time, but you'll be around a bit longer yet, and
hopefully,
and we've more chances to catch up with people, and you've got more time to do it these days. So compared to the younger days when we're all establishing careers and families and doing other things. Okay, well, we might wind it up here. So look, thank you for making yourself available to. Share your memories and thoughts and so forth on your days at Roseworthy, and I'm sure that there's been lots of women who have followed you in your own footsteps to also have careers in agriculture, and have enjoyed the pleasures of being at Roseworthy. Because a lot of people say if you've been to Roseworthy, you can do anything, because it's a very all-rounder sort of development type of thing that you experience when you go there and come out the other end as a graduate. So thank you again, Crystal, Jane and Ruth, and perhaps we'll meet another occasion. Thank you.
Thank you, David.